Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Pull Up Podcast. I am your host, Jacob Noble, from thehoopscritic.com. Alongside of me is another writer from hoopscritic.com. You can also find his work over at Brooklyn Beat, and his name is Justin. How are we doing today, Justin?
I'm good. I'm doing well. How are you?
We are fantastic. Well, I should say I am fantastic. I'm so used to having co-hosts and everything. But we are good. It's a little chilly now. We are at the turn of the season. We have the All-Star break coming next month. We have enough games under our belt to kind of see where teams are sitting, where they're going, what they should be doing, what they're not doing. And I think now is a good time to really get into the nitty-gritty of what to expect moving forward. And let's start off with the team that you cover the most, that you follow day to day, and that is the Brooklyn Nets. They went on a little bit of a winning streak there. You know, they won 3 out of 8, I believe, after dropping 2 in a row to the Raptors and Celtics, 2 divisional opponents. How would you grade their season so far today? Currently sitting at 10-23. You know, I know a lot of people in the Boston, Massachusetts area were hoping that they would have a little fewer wins than 10 and kind of compete with those 76ers for the worst record. But how would you grade this season so far with Joe Johnson basically playing uninspired basketball? They now lost Jared Jack for the remainder of the season. Brooke Lopez was recently named Player of the Week. How would you rate it so far?
You know, I think I would probably have to rate in the C or D range. You know, you can't really give them an S because, you know, nobody expected the team to be good. So the fact that they're not good, you know, it's reality. We can't hold it against them too much, you know, that way. But you can't really give it an A or B. It's not really a team that's, you know, feisty or the kind of team that, you know, other teams look at and say, oh, wow, they're not good, but they can kind of be, you know, a danger to us. You know, I know they had the really terrible start. Then it kind of looked like they stabilized there for a little bit. And lately it's almost worse than the start. I mean, they were talking about, you know, we're establishing something at home. Now they've lost, I think it's like 8 in a row. Yeah, Barclays Center. Nobody's going to the game, so maybe it's not even a home court advantage, you know. You know, they were in New Jersey in there last year, and Avery Johnson said we don't really have a home court advantage. You know, we're 4 years later now, and I don't know. We still don't have a home court advantage, right? So it's going to try.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, Justin, because where the team was looking after acquiring Garnett and Pierce, you know, they had Darren Williams, they had Joe Johnson, new stadium, they moved to Brooklyn, Jay-Z was involved. It really looked on the up and up. And looking back now, it's really hard to see where they're going. They have an awful general manager, which we'll get into a little bit later in the show. But it's definitely a tale of two cities at this point with this Brooklyn Nets team. But I want to focus on the Jared Jack injury because a lot of people are getting into the daily fantasy sports. And as they should, it's very fun. I do it on a nightly basis myself and a group of my friends, and I also do it in just random leagues that I find. It's a good way to, you know, stay up on not just your home team but everything and pay attention to what's going on in the league. With the news that Jared Jack has tore his ACL, he's done for the year. The Nets have 2 young point guards in Donald Sloan and Shane Larkin. Are you expecting anything from these two guys? Neither of them have really kind of stepped up on a consistent basis to take over that starting point guard role. In my personal opinion, if you're the Nets, I would give the ball to Joe Johnson and let him run the point forward and kind of run a bigger lineup out there. But that's just my personal preference. What do you see in the Nets doing moving forward to replace the missing of Jared Jack?
You know, I think Joe Johnson more as like a point forward might make sense. I know he's older, but, you know, his passing skills probably haven't deteriorated as much as the fact that, you know, he simply can't take guys off the dribble anymore. And that's really part of the problem with him. You know, you want to put him on the block, but then Brook Lopez is on the block. So then you want to put him outside, but then he can't get by anybody. You know, you might want to try him point forward, you know, kind of see how that goes. I mean, Larkin and Sloan, you know, they're backup points, you know. I think Larkin is done a decent job this year of showing that he could be a backup point guard in this league. You know, he could be a guy that you have a top 10 or 15 point guard and you give him 15, you know, 20 minutes a game. He's showing that he could do that. And I think Sloan could do that too. But in the situation where they're in sharing point guard duties, they're just overmatched.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, and, you know, it's very hard to get up for this Nets team. He points out the attendance isn't really showing it either. The fans aren't really showing it. Who on this roster are you excited to watch on a nightly basis? Because I as good as Brook Lopez is from time to time, and the reason I say from time to time, he gets injured quite often. His style of play is kind of a dying skill in this new fast-paced league that every team seems to be going forward. You know, having a half-court post-up center is almost irrelevant in the modern game. So I don't really care to watch him play much. I know he never really did it for me, but Nets fans, who do they have to look forward to?
That's the thing. The answers to this question are just really bleak. I mean, Lopez, like you said, you know, I think he's a good player. He's not an exciting player to watch. He's not up and down. He's not fast with the ball. He's doing things that are, you know, probably relatively boring compared to what, you know, some other, you know, good players around the league are doing. I mean, a guy like Thaddeus Young, he's the type of, you know, solid yet unspectacular yet effective, which means not really all that exciting to watch, right? I mean, you know, things happen at times, but generally there's not a lot of excitement on the team. I mean, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is a nice bright spot before he got hurt. Even in his case, he's not doing it on the offensive end. It's more defense and things you don't really see. And there's just not much excitement on the team. I mean, Willie Reed's a nice, you know, buyout pickup that, you know, not buyout pickup, but kind of non-guaranteed, you know, late contract they found. He's still not a guy that exactly is going to get you to tune in. So that's part of the problem, too. They don't have anybody like that in the team.
Yeah, no one really looked forward to, and they're kind of in cap hell next year. Granted, they'll be under the cap just a little bit. You know, the Darren Williams contract's not helping them either. They still got Brook Lopez for the next couple seasons after this for about $43 million. They got Thaddeus Young locked in for another 3 years after this year. You know, a couple options, a couple team options, a couple player options floating around out there. You know, it's looking like 2017 is going to be the season that they really get to start the rebuilding in terms of using their draft pick, having the cap space. They'll only have Thaddeus Young and Brook Lopez under guaranteed money that year. So maybe they can convince somebody to come in here, although next season is the big free agent prizes with LeBron and Kevin Durant and everybody else out there. So let me ask you, you know, moving forward, you still got Billy King. He's there, you know, for the time being. You still got the Russian trainer owner.
Do we have to do this with Billy King?
Well, you have him for now. I mean, hopefully he's not there by the end of the season, just for the sake of what this roster currently looks like, and the ability of it to improve is very slim. But at the same time, let's play the real-life scenarios. We have Billy King. What are you doing if you're Billy King's assistant? You're sitting in those meetings trying to find a way to get out of this roster hell.
I really think the only way out is free agency. The tough thing about free agency, as we've seen, is, you know, it's so random. I mean, the Knicks had all that cap space. You know, they didn't get anybody, you know, big in free agency. They essentially got role players. I mean, the Lakers have had cap space the last few years, haven't been able to get anybody. And these are, you know, two of the huge market signature franchises. If they can't do it, how are the Nets supposed to sell? Oh, we just have New York, right? So it's a huge problem, and yet it's their only option. I mean, I know some people have said, you know, try to trade Lopez and Young and do it through the draft. The problem there is they're in such pick debt they can't even come close to making it up. You know, as you know, I don't need to tell you where the picks are going, right? But you know, they really don't have any picks. I mean, they have like one second round pick over the next 5 years, no lottery picks over the next three, assuming Boston's in the 2017 playoffs. So they're just in such debt that even if they traded Lopez and Young, they still wouldn't have lottery picks. They'd be the Sixers without the lottery talent. I mean, that's a really bad place. So really their only hope is you have a front court. You try to find a back court in free agency. Try to find guys to up the quotient a little bit. You know, maybe instead of winning 20 games, you win 30, 35, maybe 40. And then, like you said, in 2017, you try to take the next step. But unless you get somebody huge like a Durant or somebody like that, which, you know, you never know in this league. Nothing's ever 100%, but I'm not exactly going to be holding my breath for it. You know, that's really the process, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's tough, and as you just pointed out, they don't have their pick next season. It belongs to the Celtics. The Celtics have the option to swap their picks in 2017, which will, you know, based on what we're seeing, is most likely going to happen. It'll move Boston up a few spots, you know, potentially up to the top three or whatever it ends up being. Highway robbery, so to speak. Yeah, it's really glim. So let me ask you this. If you could If there was a trade partner out there, would you entertain moving Brook Lopez and Thaddeus Young? Those are kind of your, you know, your only commodities you can move in terms of get something back. You know, maybe take an expiring contract to help get yourself out of cap hell. You know, maybe you trade one of these, you know, young guys that you have, like Hollis Jefferson or Bodgen. You know, maybe someone wants one of those two guys. Would you make that move and kind of take, and I hate the way they're doing this, I think you and I agree on the 76ers, but do you kind of take that route where you just gut the roster and you know, just go get all unproven players and, you know, roll the dice?
I really don't think I'd do it with Lopez and Young just because, you know, again, like you said with the picks, you don't pick in 16 or 18. 17, you're probably not picking in the lottery, assuming Boston's at least, you know, pseudo-competitive like they kind of are now, right? So you're kind of in this situation where you're just not going to be picking near the top of the draft no matter what you do. You may as well have as much talent on hand as you can because it's the only thing that you could use to get free agents, right? Now, with a guy like Bogdanovich, and I saw this thing with the Hornets that apparently, according to Mitch Lawrence, apparently the Hornets have reached out. You know, he's the type of guy, he's not really a starter in this league, at least not proven so. You can get something for him, like a draft pick or a future consideration. You know, that might be something to look at. But, you know, Lopez and Young are established starters. I think what the Nets need to do is try to get more of those. They can't really go backward just because of the pick situation. Now, if the Nets didn't have that draft pick problem, then I'd say, hey, maybe trade these guys and just load up on young talent. But I just don't think they could do it with the pick situation.
Right. It's tough, and the free agent thing is the most, you know, mind-boggling thing for me, just because, you know, the players aren't necessarily chasing the money anymore. They are chasing the best opportunity to win, and we've seen it time and time again. And to me, that has become the most interesting facet of free agency these days. You pointed out the Knicks had all this money in the world, and, you know, didn't really do much with it, couldn't really do much with it. You know, players saw it, didn't really want to go there. But at the same time,
yeah, really,
you know,
with the exception of, you know, maybe Melo to New York City, it kind of seemed like you really wanted that. If you look at free agency really since the whole LeBron thing in 2010, you know, guys have really surprised people with where they've gone, and the choices that they've made have been related to what's the place where I could win the most. Hasn't really been about market, hasn't really been about money, especially now with the cap so high that you're going to get big money any place. It's really just been about where I could win, and that's not exactly a good sign for the Nets.
Let's segue over to the other New York team who is vastly overachieving. And I believe they are at 18 wins, if I'm not mistaken, this season so far, which is one better than they did last season, which they had 17 total wins last year. So congratulations on Phil and everybody for turning that roster around fairly quickly. And I know there's a lot of skeptics out there, and I'm one of them. You know, I'll be the first to admit, I did not think they would, you know, be close to 500 here and, you know, competing for potentially a playoff spot. I know the East is oddly deep this year. In terms of deep, I mean, there are more teams over 500 than are going to make the playoffs. But how would you grade this Knicks season so far and the acquisitions they were able to make? It seems to be that they brought in some good quality players in there. You know, Jose Calderon's a very good team player. Aaron Aflalo back in New York is another great player there. Or not great player, but a good, you know, bench player. They got Sasha Vucevic, Luan Munson. They got a lot of veterans here who are just going to be good guys and, you know, not have the kind of a head case of a roster and a Mimi roster. They got some good veterans around there and obviously Carmelo.
Yeah, I think they have to get at least a B+, maybe even an A-. I mean, the only reason I can't go quite to an A or an A+ is just because, you know, the ultimate goal was to try to get, you know, a top 15, top 20 player, really, really launch up the standings. So they didn't quite do that. So it can't be perfect, but it's, you know, as close to that as you can get. I mean, they've done a really good job over there. I mean, Phil Jackson got criticized, but he got rid of players that, you know, clearly didn't fit. He got something back to them where he could, and he made a really good draft pick that was criticized at the time. I mean, how often do the Knicks make the pick that's criticized rather than the thing that's going to be in the paper, right? And they're in a really good position now. I mean, they have a top 5 pick growing and developing. You know, Melo's still playing really well, you know, obviously, and you know, they have a pretty deep roster around them, and they kind of look like a nice, scrappy 500 team. And I think it presents some interesting off-season questions about how they take the next step. You know, that's always the tougher step, but they've taken such a huge step already.
Right, and you know they won three in a row. They won 4 out of 5 here. They really seem to be playing some really good basketball. You know, Kristaps Porzingis kind of hit that wall a little while ago. He seems to be coming back into it, and it's just a matter of, and a lot of people don't understand. You know, the NBA season is 82 games, and a lot of these players, whether they played overseas in professional leagues, college basketball, D League, they're not playing as many games as they would in the NBA. And, you know, it is a learning curve. It's going to take a toll on your body. It takes time to adjust. And, you know, a lot of the veterans know this now. And if you have a good veteran team, they'll teach these young guys how to, you know, prepare for a long NBA season, because it really is a long NBA season to travel and, you know, what have you. And just given, you know, 30 minutes a night, it's not easy. And, you know, some of the best athletes out there tend to break down, and, you know, the teams that tend to go the farthest are the teams that manage their minutes. And, you know, who better than Greg Popovich to look at? And someone on Project Spurs tweeted out, you know, how many quarters their stars have rested in the fourth quarter. And, you know, everybody's, you know, on that top tier of their team has rested at least 3 to 4 to 5 and sometimes even double-digit games for LaMarcus Aldridge and Duncan all the way in the fourth quarter. They just were able to sit them the whole entire fourth quarter. How do you see Derek Fisher handling the minute management with this Knicks team?
You know, I know there's been some controversy with that. He plays, you know, kind of goes into the bench too much, or he hockey subs, or, you know, things like that. But, you know, he probably does need to manage some of those minutes, especially Porzingis, because you don't want him to wear down. Because, I mean, he's probably the second-best player in the team now, right? And, you know, he's young, and you really don't want to wear him down. I mean, a guy like Melo, he's starting to get very high up there with career minutes. You don't want to kind of wear him down either. So I think it's something they need to watch. I understand why he gets hesitant, because when you're coaching in the NBA, you're always coaching for your job, right? That's just the way it is. And, you know, he's probably worried, you know, I go into my bench too much, I lose a game because guys played 5 last minutes. I lose a game here, a game there, a few games are out of the playoffs. I could be out of job next year, right? So, you know, coaches that have that in the back of their mind. But, you know, I think they got to try to put it aside and try to manage some of these starter minutes, because these guys might wear down too quickly. It kind of happened, ironically, the last time the Knicks were competitive. They had Jason Kidd on the roster, and they basically ran him into the ground, almost literally. So,
was ran him into retirement. So let me ask you this real quick. If you had to place some money on this bet right now, today, what we know now, moving forward, do the Knicks make the playoffs?
No.
I'm with you there. I don't think they do. And it's. I mean, even this division alone is, you know, they got two tough teams up there, and we're going to get to those in a second. We're going to skip over the 4-win Philadelphia 76ers, although I kind of have to give them some credit. They won 3 out of the last 10 games. Ish Smith seems to be like a nice piece out there. He's getting everybody to play well, and, you know, they're a little more competitive. So I think it's a good thing that, you know, the commissioner Adam Silver stepped in here, and Jerry Colangelo's over there, Mike D'Antoni's over there. You just can't have a team be that embarrassing for 3, 4, 5 years in a row. You know, they got to be competitive, because it is hurting the product in my mind. And I know some people think it's the most brilliant plan in the NBA history to what the 76ers are doing, and people are praising it, the analytic nerds. But it's bad basketball. You know, I have no desire or purpose to watch it. I'm sure you agree the same. But let's talk about the next team up here. That's the Boston Celtics. They are the hottest and coldest team. When they are hot, they almost seem like the best team in the Eastern Conference. And when they're cold, they kind of look like the team that doesn't have a superstar. What do you think is the biggest problem for the Celtics in terms of being consistent?
You know, it kind of might be that. I mean, they have a great, you know, style with an equal opportunity offense. Obviously, they really move and share the ball. I mean, obviously everyone loves to watch, you know, the Golden State Warriors. I mean, how could you not? But if you're looking for kind of like a less talented version of that in terms of, you know, moving it and sharing it and playing together, I mean, that's the Celtics team. But, you know, it works out well. I think they're going to make the playoffs and be a tough out for somebody. But, you know, the problem could come from the fact that, you know, I know there's that stereotype or cliche, oh, you're only as good as your best player, which isn't necessarily true, but, you know, at times when guys are cold, when shots aren't falling, sometimes the team looks to one guy to see if they could just kind of, you know, can you get us through this run? Can you get us through this patch? And there are teams that have a guy that could do that. I don't know if the Celtics, you know, quite have that guy. And then sometimes in the NBA you get down, I hate to say it, you get down 10, 15 points. And like you said, long season, 82 games, try it another day. Right? So they could be missing that kind of piece, and they know that.
Oh, they absolutely do know that. You know, Ainge is going to be the first person calling and texting and emailing, and, you know, he's going to be active in all trade talks, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's involved because Angel loves to be involved in trades. And, you know, how many times do we see a three-team trade where he's basically just throwing in a couple of second-round picks for another second-round pick, basically swapping seconds just to help a deal get done or, you know, taking on some salary cap just to help a deal get done. And, you know, most people forget, but he was one of the main reasons that LeBron was able to go back to Cleveland because he helped out Cleveland right there with, you know, a couple small little moves to help them get the cap space they needed to get LeBron.
Yeah, I think a lot of that personally is just, you know, getting involved, you know, a big trade, and you just kind of help facilitate it. Some of it's goodwill, right? I mean,
right. Well, yeah,
you do good
exactly.
By
another
team, when they're thinking about
remember that.
A big piece, they're more likely to come to you than somebody they don't like, right?
Right, and they're more, you know, willing to answer the phone when you call, and you know, willing to discuss something, even if it's ridiculous at first. They know you're, you know, you have good intentions, so to speak. But to me, the biggest problem with the Celtics is. And it's just stability with the roster. And I know Stevens is still, you know, mixing and matching, and he's still playing his matchups. He's still, you know, dealing with injuries on the team. Marcus Smart comes back. Avery Bradley goes down. And, you know, he just hasn't really had a full, healthy roster this season yet. But the biggest problem to me, biggest glaring hole, is Isaiah Thomas's inconsistency in the first three quarters. Because in the fourth quarter, he's unbelievable. You know, he's, you know, one of the top scorers in the fourth quarter. He can get to the line anytime he wants. But those first three quarters for him seem to be a struggle, especially since he starts, you know, because he's starting off at that pace instead of being the change of pace. I think that's one of the bigger problems. But the biggest problem for me with this team is just his inability to defend. And he's getting eaten up on the defensive end. And what it's causing is the Celtics to have to cover and rotate and, you know, so that was a big problem. In the game last night against Detroit, what I saw was they have to collapse the whole team in terms of defense in the paint because they don't have a solid rebounder. They don't have a solid shot blocker outside of Amir Johnson. So a lot of the times the Pistons are getting open three-pointers and, you know, their wings and guards were having to, you know, scurry out to the corners and chase down these shooters because they have to focus on helping everybody rebound. It has to be a team rebounding effort. So those to me are the two glaring holes for them. They need someone else to help score, and they need a big man to help the defense be able to stay in their own position and not have to compensate for the lack of defense in terms of shot blocking in the paint and Isaiah Thomas's man. Cause I mean, 5'9" is not expected to guard many people.
Yeah. And there's so many talented point guards and, you know, quick guards out there that if your guards can't really play defense, I know Bradley's a great defender, but if your guards struggle playing defense, especially a point guard where there's so many players who exploit defenses, you're going to have a tough time.
Right. You know, he's not going to be able to stay in front of most people. And that's why they move him to the shooting guard in some situations where they will put a guy like Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley on the ball. Sometimes even Jay Crowder, who's an excellent defender as well. But, you know, having those three excellent defenders still is not hiding Isaiah at times. And it's really depending on the matchups there, you know, who you can slide in there and who you can go against. But let's finish up with the Atlantic Division leaders currently, the Toronto Raptors. They've always been above average the past, you know, few seasons here. I really like their backcourt in DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, but they don't scare me. If I'm an NBA team in the playoffs, they don't scare me. I could essentially see them losing basically to anybody in the playoff picture right now. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they lost in the first round of the playoffs. You know, currently right now their matchup against the Atlanta Hawks, I could see them losing that series because the Hawks are a little bit deeper. Toronto, for me, doesn't use their big men enough. I don't know if you agree or disagree with me on that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that. I mean, every time they play, you always wonder why isn't Jonas Valanciunas involved. I mean, he's really talented. He could score, he could finish, he could bully people inside. And sometimes you don't know why he's used. I mean, I know it goes back 2 years and they play the next playoffs, but, you know, it's kind of similar now. I mean, in that series, Nets are going, you know, really small with a lot of kind of hybrid lineups, and Raptors are never going down to them with basketball. And I think it's something they could use more, especially because they have such a talented backcourt that can really open up the court for those guys. I mean, Lowry's really good. I think he's an incredible player. But, yeah, I agree with you. They don't use the bigs enough.
Now, why do you think that is? Is it just because their guards need the ball so much? I mean, to me, it's kind of baffling why they don't get their big men involved more. I know the injury to Damari Carroll is not going to help them out so much, and you know, they're going to have to compensate for that. But You know, they're basically just using their big men as defenders only and rebounders. And it's, to me, it's such a waste for such an offensive talent like Jonas Valanciunas. I think his upside is just too much, and it's, I feel like it's just being wasted on this team. And he is kind of surrounded by big men who aren't scorers. You know, Patrick Patterson's not really going to light up a box score for you. Obviously, they got Anthony Bennett up there, who might be one of the biggest busts in the draft history. They got Bismack Biyombo trying to find his way into a serviceable role, though he's been playing much better in Toronto. But none of those guys kind of help out in the scoring end. And, you know, they do have some depth there in the big men, and they're basically just using them as decoys.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a problem, especially when I think they gave Valanciunas a pretty big extension, right? I'd have to check, but, you know, they paid him his money, and if you're not going to use him, you should just maybe redistribute it someplace else. And yeah, I mean, I think they're just really reliant on almost like kind of a take turns with Lowry and DeMar, and, you know, that can only take you so far. It's, you know, it's one thing if you're Cleveland with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving taking turns, but, you know, no offense to Toronto, when you're Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan taking turns, it's good. It's a talented team, but it's not going to take you that far, right?
Right. And to me, they're deep, but they're not that deep, especially in the guard position. You know, Corey Joseph plays backup point guard. If Kyle Lowry goes down, and he's been injured, I think almost every single year he's missed a little bit of time here. Just the way he plays pretty physical. He's, you know, he's not in the best shape, although I believe this summer is when he got into really good shape. Those pitchers are floating around out there. But they definitely need some guard depth, especially with Damari Carroll going down. They're going to need, you know, another shooter out there or a backup point guard to help out. At least to get Lowry and DeMar DeRozan some rest in these games. They can't be playing 38 minutes, 40 minutes a game and expect to be healthy come for the playoffs. So let me ask you this. What's the ceiling and what is the floor for this Raptors team heading into the playoffs?
I'd say the ceiling is probably winning a playoff series. I don't think they're going to be tough enough to win, you know, two playoff series, especially with the way Carroll's been so up and down with his health, unfortunately. But, and like you said, we're not using their bigs. I think they're just too reliant on, you know, it's one of these things, the mirage of depth. You think you have all the steps, but then you're so reliant on one or two players. I think they're too reliant on Lowry and DeRozan to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. The floor could even be, I don't think it'll happen, but the floor could be missing the playoffs, you know.
Right. Now, the thing with Toronto is they win the games they're supposed to. You know, they beat Charlotte, they beat Brooklyn. They gave Chicago a hell of a fight. Chicago's been playing really well as of late. Another team that's kind of running their stars into the ground, which is going to be an adjustment for Fred Hoiberg out there. It's 82-game season, not a college 35-game season. They got their butts kicked by Cleveland at home. I'm sorry, in Cleveland. So Toronto is doing what they're supposed to do, winning the games they're supposed to win, losing the games they probably shouldn't win, and in between those losses, they're competitive or giving themselves a chance to win a game here and there. It's going to be very interesting. So last question for you before we hang up here, Justin. Do you see any changes in terms of the current standings in the Atlantic Division? And the second part of that question is, how many teams do you think from the Atlantic Division will represent into playoffs?
I would say the standings won't change in terms of the order. It'll be Raptors, you know, Celtics, Knicks, Nets, Sixers. I think that'll be the final standings like they are now. And in terms of playoff representation, I'll go with two teams. I'll go with Toronto and Boston.
You know, it's funny because the Celtics have a losing record at home. And, you know, the whole division's terrible at home outside of the Raptors there. Something that's very interesting. And obviously the Sixers have not won a game in a division, but the Sixers are excellent. Excellent team when they play the Pacific Division out there. It's kind of hysterical to me. But hey, that will do it for us here. Justin, we'll get you back on, and you know, maybe we'll break down some other divisions around the league for the listeners out there. And you know, follow Justin on Twitter, @BrooklynBeat, and I'm sure you've seen me tweet at him all day long today because he was our guest. And anything you want to plug before we head out of here?
No, that's all. It's been great.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Justin. And everybody, take care and have a happy Thursday, and watch the games tonight.